Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Hackers are seemingly everywhere, and increasingly they're going after local governments with ransomware attacks. Now, these are attacks where an organization's computer systems are essentially taken hostage by hackers, and they only release control and data if the victims pay. Well, the Leominster School District fell victim to a ransomware attack, and they recently decided to pay hackers $10,000 in Bitcoin. And so the school's district systems are up and running again. But we wanted to know, how common are these ransomware attacks, and how can municipal governments protect against them? So joining me now is Israel Barak. He's the Chief Information Security Officer at Cyber Reason, a Boston-based cybersecurity firm. Israel, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me, Magnum.
So first of all, let me just ask you about this Leominster attack, because, like, poor Leominster School District, one wouldn't think that it's a prime target for a ransomware attack. I mean, are you surprised that it happened to them, first of all?
Not at all. Ransomware is what we currently refer to as mostly an untargeted type attack. So attackers would usually compile a list of victims based off of email lists that they gather from different sources. They don't necessarily target one organization or specific organizations in particular, and then they would send this out in this sort of shotgun approach. Mm-hmm. And with a natural selection type process, the less protected organizations would actually be more likely to fall victim to that.
Ah, okay. So I'm going to come back to that in just a second here, because I just wanted to know if in the "are you surprised" line of questioning, are you surprised that Leominster School District decided to pay $10,000 in Bitcoin in order to get their data back?
Well, payment of ransom, while definitely being a viable option, I think has to be considered as the last possible option. I think before that, options to recover the data, recover the affected systems should be considered. But if these options are not really on the table, if data backups do not exist, if the systems that were compromised cannot be recovered, then paying is something that should be considered.
Well, is that something that the hackers are thinking about? Because maybe, you know, they're sort of playing a game here that $10,000 in Bitcoin may cost Leominster less than what they'd have to pay to do the recovery.
That's exactly what most ransomware attackers are doing. They're actually sending out these attacks, and they slice those attacks based on the type of victims that would receive them. So private individuals will receive a request to pay somewhere in the order of a couple of $100s. Small organizations would be in the order of magnitude of tens of thousands of dollars, typically in the low end of the tens of thousands. Larger organizations would be looking at a couple of $100,000. So they try to make it a more attractive option than to try to invest in recovery.
Yeah. How would an organization or an individual within an organization know that they've even been a victim of a ransomware attack?
Well, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about ransomware, if we can put it that way. It's going to become very apparent to the victim that they've fallen victim to it, because that's what the attacker wants them to see. Within a couple of minutes from being affected by that type of malware, you'll see a notice that tells you what happened. Essentially, your files have been encrypted. They're going to provide some sort of evidence that they can recover the data for you. So they'll show you how they can recover one or two files, but not everything. And they would tell you how you can communicate with them in order to pay the ransom.
Uh-huh. In some cases, they lock you out of your own data, and in others, they have stolen the data as well?
In many cases, ransomware tools are combined with other attack tools. So they don't only lock the data. They would actually take data off of your possession. They would look at sensitive information that they can take, like usernames and passwords, credit card information, credentials to access financial websites. So they would try to take, in many cases, information to use either as part of the ransomware request or to sell on the black market separately.
Yeah, so if you're Leominster School District and you pay that $10,000 in Bitcoin, how can you possibly, you cannot have any confidence that the data that's been stolen from you.
And that's exactly what you need to consider as part of the risk management program here, right? When you get impacted by one of these tools, you need to consider the fact that the data that was on these impacted systems had been taken from you.
Yeah. So how common is this?
It's actually one of the most common forms of cybercrime. It has become probably the most successful form of cybercrime that was ever created.
That's sobering. Yeah. You know, and so here's the thing. The reason why we wanted to discuss this around Leominster School District is not to single them out. I mean, for exactly the reasons you said, it's one of the most common forms of cybercrime. But I'm particularly interested in what your thoughts around municipal and local government school districts falling prey to this. Because on the one hand, you were saying earlier that they're perhaps amongst the most vulnerable. But on the other hand, the kinds of data they have, the work that their IT systems do is really, really important. So separate from the cost of the ransomware attack or the cost of the ransom itself, there's the crippling effect that losing access to IT and data have on school districts or cities. I mean, I'm thinking about what happened in Atlanta, Georgia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's really what makes more sophisticated cybercrime attackers that successful. They tried to create lists of organizations that they believe would be more willing to pay. And locking them out of their information would actually be a much more compelling event for them to cave in for a ransom. So they would compile lists of higher education institutions, right? Healthcare related institutions. Some of them will be small organizations or medium-sized organizations when they can assume that there's not going to be a lot of good IT security hygiene or backups. And they, just by locking them out of their data, would create a compelling event for them to pay.
Right. You know, I mentioned Atlanta just to give folks some more data, some information about what happened there. I mean, the city of Atlanta was the subject of a victim of a ransomware attack. Thus far, according to the Associated Press, Atlanta spent some $4 million trying to recover from that attack. 6 weeks later, things aren't 100% back to normal. I mean, they lost IT control of their court system, for example. Like, people couldn't make court dates. Folks were trying to use pen and paper to schedule things. There's some city officials that say that they lost 16 years worth of files in the attack. So it's a really big deal down there. And again, to the cost of $4 million so far.
You know what? I think it's actually a good example of very high social responsibility, because at the end of the day, paying a ransom may appear to be the easiest way out of that situation. Compare something like a $10,000 in ransom to the aforementioned $4 million in spend on recovery. It sounds like that paying the $10,000 should have been the obvious option.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you want to consider who you're paying that money to.
Yeah.
And in many cases, those are cybercrime organizations that are actually acting as part of a larger crime organizations. They're involved in more than just ransomware activities. So you do want to consider who this organization is that you're funding and what other activities they're involved in.
And now they're asking for the ransom in Bitcoin.
Exactly.
So it makes it even harder, if not impossible, to trace where the money's going.
So Bitcoin itself is very traceable.
It is traceable.
We know exactly how to trace movements of Bitcoins between different wallets. But the issue becomes when that Bitcoin is monetized on in geographies that we don't have exact visibility into. So when that Bitcoin ends up in a Chinese wallet or a Russian wallet or a Korean wallet, when that Bitcoin turns into something that is not Bitcoin, like actual currency, or is used to buy merchandise, that's when you often lose track of who used it and how.
Okay. Israel, this is so fascinating. I have a couple more questions for you, if I may. Because in late March, when we first started learning about what had happened in Atlanta, we at Radio Boston actually reached out to the city of Boston to ask them about sort of their ransomware readiness, if they had it. And I just want to read, we got a statement from Patricia Boyle McKenna, who was acting chief information officer for the city of Boston. And she said, "The city of Boston takes cybersecurity very seriously and has a robust, proactive cybersecurity protocol in place. They've invested significantly to protect Boston and residents' data. And as we see every day, organizations are vulnerable to cyber attacks. They'll continue to enhance and invest in security capabilities." Now, they also told us that, you know, here's some of the things that Boston's doing. They have their cybersecurity team as a multi-layered defense. They've adopted security best practices from the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, the Cybersecurity Framework, and the Center for Internet Security Critical Controls. They all City of Boston employees go through cybersecurity training in order to identify phishing emails and creating strong passwords and how to store sensitive data. And they're investing in cybersecurity. Boston says that it's invested close to $3 million in enhancement projects to identify, protect, detect, and respond to cybersecurity incidents. So that's a lot. But, I mean, this is your world. I just wanted to get kind of your assessment. Is Boston doing enough?
Well, I think the steps in the program that they have in place make sense. I think that it's structured well. I think that it hits on all major pillars. The only thing that I would add to that type of program is usually we think that typical preventative tools, antiviruses, would be sufficient to stop something like a ransomware from running. The reality is that since so many new variants of ransomware are produced every day, those traditional tools are becoming less and less effective against them. And that rate of change and innovation is just increasing because of how appealing that economy is to new attackers.
Yeah.
And so the only thing I would recommend in addition to that is investment in deploying a technology that's able to identify the behavior of these endpoints. There are various technologies out there on the market. Some of them are freely available, like Ransom Free. Basically, identify the behavior of ransomware acting on endpoints in the organization and prevent that from executing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Israel Barak is Chief Information Security Officer for Cyber Reason. They're a Boston-based cybersecurity company talking to us about the seeming ubiquity of ransomware. Israel Barak, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Magna.